Hello, and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the cognitive programming experiential gestalt world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and joining me from a hermetically sealed mayonnaise jar on Funkin' Wagnall's porch is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hi.
Hi. This week we're taking a look at Season 7, Episode 4, How to Dial a Murder. This episode stars Nicole Williamson as a psychologist who uses his trained Dobermans to murder his friend and work colleague. Nicole was a celebrated Shakespearean actor in his day, but was not able to translate that into film stardom, appearing notably as Merlin in the 1981 film Excalibur. Yes. He was in the 1997 adaptation of the comic Spawn.
Uh-huh.
And he played Sherlock Holmes in the Sherlock Holmes meets Sigmund Freud film, The 7% Solution, opposite Alan Arkin as Freud. Wait, hold on. And starring Robert Duvall as Watson. Wait.
What?
Laurence Olivier plays Moriarty in this? And it was written and directed by Nick Meyer, who wrote and directed The Wrath of Khan, the best Star Trek movie ever? Why are we not talking about this right now?
How have you not seen that movie?
That is a real good question. I intend to get to the bottom of that.
I expect you to tell me how that is by the next time we record an episode, because I want to know.
I'm definitely looking
at
that.
I read a little bit about Nicole Williamson, and I was like, it seems like he's credited as being like one of the best Hamlets in the last century.
I saw but like also every single page that I saw this guy, it was like he was widely considered to be one of the greatest actors of his generation and caliber.
But also, he apparently was like a huge pain in the ass to work with.
Oh, I believe it. This episode is any indication,
people
I believe
on the
it.
Ass with like weapons during like stage combat and all kinds
cool.
of like, yeah, just by all accounts, like a very difficult human to work with.
Yeah, I believe it. Anyway, Columbo. So this episode starts... guest stars Kim Cattrall as a house guest of the murderous doctor, and it features Ed Begley Jr. in a minor role as an animal
and
control.
A mustache.
Yeah, a minor mustache as well.
It is a minor mustache.
This is a fantastic episode of Columbo, it must be said. I love this murderer. I think he's perfect.
He is really, really fantastic. Like, he's such a good... the fact that he was apparently a dickbag aside, like, to people at work, he is really, really talented. Like, he's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's great in every single scene. Unfortunately, don't have the capability this week to play the clips as we're going. So I'm going to drop in here a little clip of the intro of the doctor giving his speech. This episode, I think it's fair to say,
like
is all about words. So here's a little bit.
They do kind of hammer that in.
Yeah, here's a little bit of the of his speech about words to his to the people who have come to him for his self-help seminar.
Right, at like the center or institute for
Here is hold on, I've got a little thing. I brought a thing to make noise so that I would know where to put the clips in. Here's a little
You're not really sure what death means, but you don't like it. You don't like the word. You're bothered by the word mother. You're afraid of the word father. Words. Food, money, boss, wife, sex. Mommy and daddy started setting you up right from the cradle, conditioning you. They took control with the control words. Then the words took control. Now who's got the control? I've got the control.
All right, so that was the clip. He's great. He gives that level of intensity pretty much throughout the entire thing. He's very intense and he's very like focused. In a weird way.
Yeah, this is an episode where it's a very strong, like, meeting of the minds kind of episode, mm-hmm. where it's just like anytime they're in the same place, you just want to see them go at it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, which is sure. fundamentally what they do through the entire episode.
It is a no filler, all killer episode this week. There are no wasted scenes. Every scene either shades the characters or advances the plot. There's no wasted time. We don't have a kooky visit to an unrelated NPC.
The only comic relief bit is, of course, Columbo's dog.
Yeah.
And it's in a scene where that is relevant to the plot. So right. it doesn't really detract. Like, it's literally just a kind of end cap to that scene.
Yeah, and unlike other dog scenes, it isn't the focal point of the entire scene, so it doesn't drag it down the same way that right. the dog in the TV repair shop did.
Mm-hmm. Although that was still an amazing scene, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, I just was going to comment and say I like a lot of things about this, but there's some stuff where I just kind of felt like, yeah, you already told us that. And I know that it was because they were like laying out the breadcrumb trail for Columbo to follow.
Sure.
But it was one of those things where I was like, did you have kind of a tighter thing and then needed to pad it out to a, like, you know, made for TV film?
This is, we'll get to it towards the end, but I think this is the most conclusively that Columbo has ever owned a criminal.
Like, oh my God, yeah.
The end
yeah,
part,
please. He, like, that catch.
I mean, we'll get to it, but like he literally like has every single point of the plan and has evidence for every single point of his plan at the very end. And just like spends a half an hour like fucking with this guy. I mean, for real.
No, not just that, man. He fucking dresses him down.
Yeah.
Like, that's the... Yeah, yeah.
Let's cover some of the other shit first. So, the murder... The basic plot of the murder is this. This doctor found out at some point in the past that his wife and his best friend and work colleague were having an affair.
Right. His work colleague is Dr. Charlie Hunter, and
yes.
his wife was Lorraine.
Right. And his wife is already deceased. It is heavily implied / outright stated that he murdered her, but that's
right.
there's no proof for that. That's far enough in the past that's out of Columbo's, you know, he can't
six
really...
6 months. Yeah.
6 months, yeah. So there's not a lot of evidence left.
Right. I mean, it definitely is one of those things where it's like when he brings it up later, but also when Charlie mentions it, it's very clear, you know, it's like talking about that tragic car accident. And it, like the moment they mention it, it's like, oh, somebody killed their wife.
Yeah.
Like it's just got that stink all over it.
It definitely has that feeling. I'm going to hold on. Let me check what clips I've got hanging out in the old hopper. I made a lot of clips from this one because there's so many wonderful little tiny bits here and there. Like this episode was written by the same guy who wrote By Dawn's Early Light, which was the one shot at the Citadel.
Right, right.
That was a fantastically written and plotted episode as well.
Yeah, actually, now that you mention that, I can definitely see kind of the parallels. I had a moment in this one where I was like, well, I need to look up Nickel because this has really given me some like very Prisoner vibes as far as just strength of character performance.
Mm-hmm. Did you find anything that he had been in that you have fond memories of? Or,
well, I mean, Merlin and Excalibur is
I never saw that. Is that a weird?
That movie's so fucking weird.
Yeah,
it's very, I guess, late 70s, early 80s.
It's 81, I believe, is what it says.
Yeah, it is of its era, for sure. Mm. But in a sort of weird, I think it's worth watching, but also it's a little out there. But he is amazing. But also, in fairness, I mean, he was also in the Spawn live action movie.
Yes, he was.
was good in that. Which is like, how did he? Why did he agree to? Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know why he did it, but I mean, he's very good. He's very good at what he did.
He liked to work, apparently, and he did what he could. I don't know what I mean by that. That was just my brain, like,
it's all
exploding.
Right.
So he makes a plot to he trains his dogs to, when they hear the sound of a phone, come running and stand by the phone.
Yes, his dogs, who are Dobermans. With
yep.
adorable bandanas, like one blue and one red.
And they are. Yep, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna wait for you.
No, you take it because my brain shut down the moment. It's Laurel and Hardy. Yeah.
Yeah. You name the dogs Laurel and Hardy.
Yes. He is a film buff. He's a collector of fake memorabilia because none of the things that he shows are actual memorabilia for what he purports them to be, which that's fine. It is a television show. I don't necessarily expect them to, you know, actually have the things.
Right. No, but I mean, but the character is definitely a like Paul Allen level of memorabilia collector.
Yes. Like he has W.C. Fields pool cue and
pool his pool table.
Pool table. he has what's one of the other ones? I'm trying not to think of the. I guess the only other one that we're shown is the Citizen Kane stuff, right? It's just those two. Is there anything else?
I don't remember if there's anything else. I mean, there's the giant like photo of Fields
of
on
W.C.
his wall.
Fields, yeah.
I know that there is. I think there's some more stuff that they touch on briefly, but generally speaking, they tend to gravitate us towards the other stuff. Like he has in the sort of opening scene where you don't see him, you just see kind of the den where he has all of this stuff. Like there are posters from classic films, and there's definitely a lot of stuff that is meant to be a cue, but I don't think they drew a ton of attention to other stuff because they didn't
have
any
like
of it.
Nickelodeons and classic slot machines and things.
Right.
Things that you would find in a prop department at
yeah,
the Paramount
exactly.
lot.
right.
And, so he has the Rosebud sled mounted to his wall, and he also has the Citizen Kane gate. And neither of them are even close to looking like the actual items, but...
No, of course not.
But they, you know, they're good enough that whatever, it's fine. So... He has trained his dogs to run over to the phone and then to attack when they hear Rosebud. To attack whoever said it, I guess?
It's not super clear, but it seems like it. Yeah,
but then
because
at the end, the
dummy has a speaker on it. Right, he points and
he
uses it as a command.
He also points and uses it. Yeah. It's very unclear exactly what the command is. But yes,
it's
so
sloppy training is what I'm saying.
He trains his dog to kill on the hearing the word Rosebud, and then he calls up his friend while he's getting a medical exam, and I'm going to drop in a clip of that right here, and you can hear what happens.
Oh, Charlie, help me settle an argument with this big shot doctor. Ernie won't take an expert's word for it, so you tell him. Now, in the movie Citizen Kane, what was written on Kane's sled? I mean, exactly what was written there?
Well, the sled's hanging in your den. It says, Rosebud.
You hear that, Ernie? Here, Charlie, I'm holding up the phone. You tell him nice and loud.
Rosebud!
I love I love that he just, like, just so shamelessly, like, lures him into saying Rosebud over and over and very loud. And it's
my favorite part of that little bit is that he hears his friend being torn apart by dogs and he gives a little fist pump at the end. Did you notice that? He's like, yeah.
Yeah. Murder. Like, he doesn't hang up either. Like,
no,
he doesn't
listens.
Like quickly like hang up. Like, he's definitely into it in a really, really creepy way.
Yeah. And then, like, also, right before he hangs up, he's just like, yeah, me.
Exactly. He's like, I did it. Yeah. But, like, I just want to point out real quick the place where he holds seminars and stuff and where he worked with his now deceased best friend.
Sure.
It's the Institute for Life Control.
Yes. He's like, all about
what a name.
He's all about control. That's actually something that's very interesting. You know, it's kind of an unexplored, like, thing, but it's very clear, I think, that Columbo, when he gets there and he sees these dogs and then he finds out more about this guy, the idea that these dogs would just go crazy when they're so well-trained, when this guy is so into control.
Right.
I mean, we see even at the point that he has sort of psychologically conditioned Kim Cattrall, a young Kim Cattrall, and sort of trained her to respond to him in specific ways. He just that's a whole weird scene. Here, I'm going to play a little bit of that.
Derek called me.
Joanne, listen to me.
It was so awful.
Listen to me. I want to comfort you, and I want you to comfort me, but not until you take control. Think of your secret word. The word that nobody knows but you. The word that defeats every other word.
I've got a new one. A new secret word. Blood!
Yeah, that one's super creepy.
That's a super creepy one. A little bit later, he starts to like choke her, while telling her she has to be quiet, and then he's interrupted by Columbo.
I know that's a really. I hate that scene. I mean, it's
really terrible.
Like, it's effective at painting him as really a monster. But also, like, I don't like it. But that first one where it's like. Remember your secret word.
And yeah, she's like, I have a new secret word. Blood.
Blood. It's, it's all so fucked up. I mean, I also, there's part of me that I can't help but just, like, look at him and the sort of, you know, pop psychology, like, pay me thousands of dollars to fix you in one night kind of workshop thing. Like, oh, man. I mean, they did a good job of, like, laying him out as one of those dudes, but
he is a piece of shit. That is to be sure. so it's very clear from these scenes that he is in control the entire time. That every aspect of his life he controls. He from the institute to his friends to his dogs and his weird psychosexual relationship with this woman that he doesn't want to sleep with for some reason.
Right. I mean, I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
Like that whole you think you're getting that whole it's so weird and kind of out of left field.
Yeah.
Like, I know that it exists there to sort of illustrate the, like, no, he is sharp and he has, like, he's on to everybody and all the bullshit that they're trying to pull kind of things.
Yeah.
Like, that is, I know that's what it's actually supposed to, but it's still just one of those things of, like, everything about this is creepy and I hate it.
For sure. He's also, you know, this is, I think, was this the third psychologist we've had? As a murderer,
probably?
I think
at least the second, and probably very likely the third for sure.
But this is like if you're writing a psychologist going up against Columbo, you have to have a scene where they say, oh, Columbo, you're very interesting. You know, you pretend like you don't know what you're doing. Like, psychologists are always able to read him, even though it's very obvious what he's doing. It's not like a super super.
It's like if they don't even acknowledge it, it kind of breaks the illusion a little because we see it from over here. We're like, no. You should be able to see that this guy is fucking with you. Like, and if you can't, then you're a really bad psychologist.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because there's like. I was just gonna say, there's that scene where they are poking around in his den with the W.C. Yeah. Fields and all of that, and just kind of out of nowhere, Mason Nicol Williamson just says, asks Columbo if he likes to play games,
right?
And it's just like. What the fuck are you doing, man? Yeah. You just murdered a dude in your own house. Like, you sure this is the right line of inquiry?
Yeah, I'm going to play a clip here. This is when Columbo first meets him. This is a very weird sort of dialogue that they have between them. And I'll just play the clip of it right now.
You're very tall, sir.
For a psychologist? Or for someone whose dogs just killed his best friend.
That's so weird. Why?
It is.
Like, why it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It's a weird, like, flex and clap back, you know?
Yes.
It's like, it's this whole thing of, like, him just being, quote unquote, in control of himself and his emotions. It's like, well, obviously you aren't. You fucking murdered your wife and your best friend because they were having an affair. You want to talk about, like, being in control of yourself. How about letting that shit go?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it seems like if you're in control, I mean, I guess this is it, is that he couldn't control her enough to stop her from stepping out. Like, right? Like, motive is she was out of his control. And so, you know, actual murders, that's the thing people talk about, is that they wanted control over a person. So,
right.
You know, that's not that out there.
And that's kind of touched on later on when Kim Cattrall is, you know, has packed up and is smoking on her bed. Don't smoke on your bed. That's
playing
not
with
a good
idea. With her teddy bear, because because they have to show us in as heavy-handed a way as possible that she is stunted emotionally.
Right. They need to really infantilize her further, you know. She's already like a young, pretty woman who is staying in the guest house with this, you know, middle-aged, you know,
she's
successful dude.
It. Yep.
Right. It's like they really need to just kind of put all of that stuff in. But anyway, but in that scene, when he comes in and sits down, and before he, you know, starts to choke her, like when they have a conversation about basically the, like, yeah, we were never going to hook up, sweetie. Like, yeah. I know you thought that that's what was going to happen, but that's not basically what he says is that, like, you know, essentially that he's still in love with his dead wife, that like nobody can measure up to her. And it's like, right. Well, wait, but
she says that she knew about the affair.
Right.
That she would see Charles. Yes. Mm-hmm. Charles Hunter.
The two of them, like, coming back from wherever they went off to bone down or whatever.
She would see them hook up, and that's when he grabs her and says, like, nobody can ever know, and he starts to, like, massage her throat
Basically, like, you knew and you didn't tell me, you know, and I don't remember what she said, but it's something kind of along the lines of, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't like you seemed happy or I don't remember what it was.
I don't know. Let's put a clip in.
It was a weird, just put the clip in.
Yep.
You mustn't talk of this, Joe. Never. No one can know. No one can ever know.
But yeah, the thing that's really kind of incredible in that scene is his transformation, because he goes from kind of a little wistful to when she basically cuts him with the, like, hey, your wife was fucking your best friend. Did you know? Like watching his face transform is kind of remarkable. Like it's truthfully one of those things when you're like, yeah, I get why people would have liked this guy's
Hamlet.
It's
a really great performance. It's very intense. Yeah. He doesn't, I talked about it earlier, but he does not drop his intensity throughout the entire thing.
No, and that's what makes him so fun to watch. Yes. Is like, he's really like, even though he is, you know, ostensibly a dude who mostly keeps it tamped down, like,
right.
Like there's so much intensity just kind of burning in him, even when he is kind of just running around keeping it, you know, inside. Like it's a really, it's such a good job. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like he's just really fucking good at
it. It is a tour de force performance, really. Like, I'm going to play a little bit here I'm going to play both sides of the word game, which is what Columbo is trying to use to trap the Doctor into revealing the kill command, because Columbo at this point has figured out that any word can be a murder command, and he thinks, well, if he had tricked him into saying the word, then he could, you know, he could figure out what it is.
Right. Then he could test it and basically prove that he had his dogs murder his best friend. Anyway,
right. Go ahead. And he says as much in the scene. He basically says, like, right, if you knew the word, you could just say it in front of me and I would have no idea. So I'll play a little bit of that right here.
Now, I'm going to say a word, and you tell me the first word that comes into your mind, then I'll say another word, and so on. Murder.
Dogs.
Justice.
Work.
Mother.
Father.
Father.
Win.
Pain.
Fail.
Murder.
Word. May we play the game again?
Sorry, the game?
The word game. Only this time, I'll start.
Money.
Work.
Work.
Teach.
Elephant.
Tusk.
Wolf.
Dog.
Dog.
Kill.
Kill.
Charlie.
Wife.
Love.
Animal.
Hunt.
Trap.
Word game.
And let me just kind of, because obviously it's an audio clip, so you can't see it, but like this is literally, like, Columbo walks in as he is just about to choke Kim Cattrall out.
Right.
You know, and then, and it goes from that to the two of them in front of the fire drinking wine.
In the highest backed chairs in the world.
Like red leather chairs, I think. Yeah,
the tops amazing. Of these chairs are 6 feet if they're an inch from the ground. Yeah. They are huge leather chairs.
They're enormous. Did you ever go to 13 Coins while you were in Seattle?
No, I didn't.
So it's got chairs like that. It's got booths that are like that, with that, like, super tall, where you're like, I feel like a child. but one of the other things I want to point out in that scene, again, it's in the actual scene, you can't hear it, is that, like, they do this lovely framing of when they cut to show Dr. Mason, it's over the shoulder of Columbo's chair, and hung across Columbo's chair is his trench coat, and you can very clearly see a tape recorder in the pocket of his trench coat. Like, it's out of focus, but it's in the front of the frame, so it's this really lovely touch.
Yeah, it's a very well directed, well written, well performed. There's not a lot to, like, criticize in the way, you know, we did the previous episode. Like, there's not a lot of that stuff that feels like, why am I watching this or whatever? Like, you don't necessarily always enjoy it, you know, enjoy it, because some of it is very intense.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, again, like, if there's anything that you know, that I would have a beef with. It is mostly just the, like, I don't need you to lay this thing out for me three times. Right. I got it from the first time you showed it. But also, it's TV and there are commercials, and, like, you know, it was made for television. And when you remember that there are commercial breaks and you get inundated with ads or distracted, it makes sense that stuff is in there. And even though it's in there a couple times, it's never, like, it's never outside of the scope of the important thing in the show, which is, you know, the murder and catching the murderer and, like, figuring out the whole process. So,
yeah. I guess we should probably get to the catch and discuss how thoroughly Columbo destroys this man. Like,
oh my fucking God.
He breaks down his murder moment by moment and says, you fucking suck at this. I am a fantastic detective, and you are a garbage piece of shit and the easiest man I have ever caught in my life. Now, he's doing this specifically to rile the doctor up. But it's amazing.
He literally says, your incompetence was disappointing.
Yeah. I'm going to play the clip of him saying that, because it's pretty amazing.
A very simple case. Not that I'm particularly bright, sir. I must say, I found you disappointing. I mean your incompetence. You left enough clues to sink a ship. Motive. Opportunity. And for a man of your intelligence, sir, you got caught in a lot of stupid lies. A lot of them.
I fucking love that scene.
It's so good.
Because it's like, because the other thing about it is he basically is like, hey, let's play pool. Like, you know, he brings the dogs with him.
Yes.
And
he sets up the dummy like it was set up. In the house at the very beginning, we see a test run. We see the dummy set up with a jacket on it, and then
the speaker on its chest saying "Rosebud" over and over, and the dogs attacking it. And so what's happened in the episode is Columbo is, you know, pulled on all these threads. Is that
let's go through it line by line. So first thing is he read the Fresnel lights, the little tiny baby spots.
Right.
He found the name of the old studio.
The studio set
the
location.
Old abandoned studio.
Mm-hmm. Which is like a Wild West, like.
Yeah,
you know.
There's a very weird sort of like Columbo in the Old West vibe, because like even when he drives up there, like 50 tumbleweeds in there. Like,
yeah, it's some real old school Westworld shit.
Like, there's a constant like wind machine blowing stuff around. It's kind of great.
The noise of the chain swinging in the wind.
it's
maddening. Did you catch when they stuck that into a later scene where he was thinking about the murder?
I did. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty like, great.
It was really actually kind of a nice callback that they were like, hey,
there's a lot of good little subtle, there's a heart, the early on, during the murder, he's getting an EKG because he's having a physical when he makes the call. And they layer the heartbeat into the soundtrack and make it part of the soundtrack leading to his murder. And it's very effective and actually pretty great.
It's really good. So Columbo has like gone to where he trained the dogs in secret.
So the items that he has hidden in the pockets of the pool table. He's hidden
God,
an
it's
item
so
in
good.
All of. It's amazing.
Fuck.
So in one pocket he has scrolled away the tennis ball, a tennis ball that the doctor uses to train his dogs. In another one, he has a photo, which is a photo that has been taken of the doctor's wife and Charles together, which is one of many photos that we earlier saw the doctor take from the desk. But Columbo found them ahead of time and took one and left the rest in there for the doctor to steal.
Right. And that scene, that earlier scene's amazing, too, by
it's
the
really
way.
Great.
Yeah. But anyway, So there's
There's that. And he has a scrap of the jacket that was on the training dummy at the.
At the Wild West Saloon.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean,
which
you know.
Is also where the straw in the guy's kitchen came from, because he found straw in his kitchen. He has the EKG slip.
Yes.
Showing that his heart rate went up at the time of the murder while he was lying down and resting because his heart went crazy. By the way, I was watching that with a friend of the show, Jenny, who is a nurse, and she says that the EKG doesn't show that. It's just a normal EKG. he didn't really do a very good job of false. Like, she's like, no, it looks fine. He looks absolutely normal. So,
right. They maybe shouldn't have shown that part
quite
to us
so much. Yeah.
Just let Columbo crumple it up so it's unreadable.
Yeah. Well, they do their best because he really. Yeah. I mean, this is a lack of care of evidence previously unseen in this show. I mean, he has carried bullet fragments around in his pocket. Now he's just leaving them in a place where a very heavy pool ball could fall on top of them and damage them.
Yep.
It's weird. It's so like stagey and like unnecessary. And he just hates this guy so much, and he just wants to stick it to him at every single moment.
But in fairness,
I love it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but by that point I wanted to see him really give it to this guy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the best part is he goes through all of this and then flat out, you know, tells him just like, you know, I thought you were really disappointing. Like you left this shit everywhere. It was so easy to catch you, my dude.
You're basically the easiest case I've ever worked on.
Right. And then at that point, like, he decides foolishly to try and make the dogs murder a fucking cop in his house. Where he literally just had his dogs murder somebody.
I guess he's going to claim, oh, Columbo had this wild theory, but then, you know, the dogs just attacked him. And
the dogs
and
went wild
him.
Again. And right. Because everyone's going to believe that.
So he can just kind of, you know, say, oh, I don't know what happened. I went there and I found he can take all the evidence that Columbo's got and destroy it. Mm-hmm. It's not, as plans go, it's not terrible because, as we know, Columbo always goes into these things with no backup. Like, he doesn't, there's no one else there. Yeah. Also, this man is, it's worth mentioning.
That's objectively not true, though. He has several times had backup in the adjacent room. Like,
that's
he's established that he does that. It doesn't feel like he did it here.
No, there's no evidence that that happened. Also, this guy is at least twice as big as Columbo. Like, at least. He could overpower him and get away, like, in a second. There's nothing stopping him. It's a fantastic catch. Yes. Yeah, so he along with the sexy trainer, the woman who played her also played the first officer on the Enterprise C in that episode of Next Generation where Tasha Yar comes back for an episode and then she goes back in time and. You know what I'm talking about?
Wow, that's a deep cut, my friend.
Hey, look. I know a lot about specific things. And
yes, I know.
This is what happens. but she has helped Columbo reprogram them so that now when they hear Rosebud, they kiss instead of kill.
Which is to say, let's be clear, the kiss command is to jump on someone and then proceed to lick their face.
Well, first it's to growl like crazy in a menacing way, and then to jump at someone and kiss them.
Yeah, it's a lot.
They kept the growl in there, I guess, just to they were like Columbo's like, no, let's keep the growl just to just for dramatic tension, just to kind of.
I just want him to think he's won.
It'll be. So
I mean,
much
that's
funnier.
Basically what it is, right?
Yeah, it'll be so much funnier when I get him if he thinks he won for a minute. This is really Columbo like 360 windmill dunking on a man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he sets up a trampoline and goes over this man's head and just stuffs him, in the worst way possible. It's amazing.
It's so good. It's such great. A good catch.
I'm guessing you have something to say about the outfits.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was going to say the dog trainer has a really solid outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like high, I think they're like thigh-high, like leather boots. It's leather handling gloves. It's kind of a shirt jacket / safari jacket in like a light, khaki tan.
Yeah.
And then like there is that that leather hip satchel, which is
for treats and things.
very good bag. That whole set was real good. Mason has a number of really solid outfits. He's got a brown three-piece, like, Barleycorn.
He loves cardigans. Kind of number. That's very clear. He loves a good cardigan.
He's definitely got some of that. He's got, like, the classic, like, navy blazer with, like, the gray flannel trousers. And, you know, like, he wears a lot of very classic-looking outfits and, like, a very strong, high-collared shirt, but not, like, the shirt collar popped out over the lapels thing, like very much in like a conservative, like is really well dressed. Let me see if I have any specifics. Yeah, like he has that plaid brown jacket that's just like, it's just sort of like brown and like not even cream, but just really, you know, tan, I guess you would say. Yeah. It's just like a very chunky kind of plaid pattern that he wears with like a really chunky knit tie, which is a really solid one. I'm looking through my notes. I know you're surprised.
Sure. I think this is probably the most despicable I have thought. Like, I mean, as far as this is one of the more, I mean, that's a pretty broad statement, but this guy's pretty fucking despicable. Like he sets up his partner. Not only does he kill this guy by the dogs, he has him bring the dogs with him to the house.
Yep. Knowing that the dogs are going to kill him.
Yeah. He later tries to kill the dogs.
Thank you.
By feeding them chocolates.
I wanted to talk about that. Yeah.
It's not really brought up in the episode, but he does try to feed them like
he tries
truffles.
To feed them chocolate. Yeah, he specifically says chocolate. And the moment that I saw them, I was like, "You fucking monster!"
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And then like, but they're just nice. They're so nice looking. These cute. They're such cuties.
I know. They look like such sweet dogs. They're also clearly very obedient. But yeah, like there's that, and then there's also like the fact that he just listens. Like, he doesn't hang up once it starts. He's like, all right, I'm good. Like, he listens. And that's real creepy. But then Columbo, hammers that home before he leaves the scene of the crime, he explicitly calls out, like, illustrates, like, no, clearly he was on a phone call. Someone called the house. Right. And he was like, the thing is, we didn't get a call about this heinous thing. Like, we got a call from the girl who was staying out here. So whoever it was is somebody who listened to a man being gruesomely murdered and didn't call us.
Yeah.
And says it right to his face in that very clear, like, I fucking know it's you. All I have to do is find the pieces.
It's kind of like, it probably would have been better for him to say, like, hey, I'm running late. You know, had said like, oh, I called my friend. I said he was running late, and then he calls the police, right? Like, that would have been better for him to say like, I don't know why, I don't know what happened, or like say I heard him antagonizing the dogs or something like that. I don't know. It's weird.
It's sloppy and bad, and rightly so. Columbo calls him out on that.
Yeah,
he's like, you're fucking shitty at this. Like.
Well, he got confident. He got away with one murder, and he was like, he tried for a twofer, and you know that it's the sophomore slump is real. You know, sometimes you got one good murder in you, and then that's it. You know, you should just hang it up after the one.
Yeah, I mean, or just don't. Maybe just don't.
Oh, don't murder? Yeah, I guess that's also a way you could go.
I think that's maybe the right call.
I suppose. Yeah, I suppose you're correct.
But really fantastic performances. Really, really enjoyed the hell out of the cat and mouse between the two of them. And sheer arrogance is so satisfying to watch, especially because we get to see all the legs kicked out from under him.
I'm excited, and I think we're going to end this season pretty strong. The next episode, I remember really enjoying as well. So I think we're going to have a good couple episodes leading off until the time jump. And it isn't to say that this is the last couple good Columbos that we'll ever see.
No, just that
it takes a while for the show to get its footing back. after being off the air for so long, and as you might expect.
Right, of course.
Yeah, but this is a really good one. I can't recommend it enough. The performance, the writing, the whole thing. Young Ed Begley Jr. get to see Kim Cattrall before she said everything like this.
Yes, I know.
Oh.
I know, and she's very good in it.
She's like, great, yeah.
She's really fantastic in it. I mean, everybody is pretty solid in this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. Yeah. All right, so you're going to have to tell me how that Sherlock movie is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, maybe that's a bonus, you know, if we get enough donations on Ko-fi, maybe that's something we could do.
Yeah, that might.
Sherlock, that would be a fun thing.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it this week. This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah?
You're awfully tall.
For someone whose friend was just murdered by dogs? Or for someone who is, yeah, I don't know.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.